I don't believe this. Came in off the tree, and just look at this. Well, that is unbelievable. I haven't seen that in such a long time.
To another episode of Bogey or Better podcast. My name's Dylan. Cam, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm fresh off of a win. Beat your sorry butt yesterday, so I'm feeling real good.
Yeah, we'll talk about that round in a minute. I got a lot to say about that. We've been playing some golf.
Yeah.
We played today's Sunday. We played yesterday, which was Saturday, and then we played last Sunday as well. And last Sunday we played in a 2v2 captain's choice with a couple of buddies of ours, me and Tony versus you and Adam.
It was a good game. And
losers were supposed to buy dinner, which we'll get to that in a minute. But so who won, Cam? Who won last week?
We don't really know for sure, honestly. No, but you and Tony won, and it was a good game. We played match play.
It was very good.
Yeah. To make sure that it was a little more even. And basically, match play, for those that don't know, is instead of counting all your strokes at the end, it's just you, whoever has the best score at the hole, at the end of each hole, wins a point. So no matter the difference in score per hole, it just is 1 point. So it keeps it a lot closer in case one team has a really bad hole. Then it doesn't count against them as much as it would if they were playing stroke play. So I think you guys won by two, right? Is that how you finished?
I think we won 3-up.
Okay, yeah. It was a good game, though.
Yeah, it was very good. Yeah, we kind of got away from y'all at, like, the last two or three holes.
Yeah. Yeah, we were holding it close, and then my driving was starting to deteriorate, and couldn't get enough out there.
Yeah, let me tell you, my short game was just on fire that day.
It was phenomenal.
I mean, my chipping, anything from 60 yards in was just beautiful, and my putting, I mean, that's the best putting I've ever had.
Yeah.
I was sinking everything.
Everything 5 yards or 5 feet, 10 feet, you were sinking. And then from off the green, you were still, and you, yeah. I mean, long putts that, like, ice put us in a great position. Two putts, we had the win, and then you sunk it from off the green where we two putt to tie. Like, it was like, I put us in the perfect position. There was actually multiple times where I did that. And somehow you guys would chip from off the green real close to tap in. And so we basically just would two putt to tie the hole. And that's also, too, like, we couldn't putt at all. We didn't make any putts.
Yeah.
So that was a huge difference. I mean, the holes that you won. Like, it wasn't like we lipped out for the win. Like, you had the stroke on us. But there were times where we should have won certain holes and our putting didn't allow it, or your putting didn't allow it. So, right. Yeah, you guys won by three, but I think it would have been a lot closer had it been a little more even on the putting green. But still, to only win by three is good.
Yeah. If my putting wouldn't have been on, it would have been really close. That Wilson staff putter just came in clutch.
Yeah, and you're getting better with it. But this Saturday, actually, we didn't end up finishing the game because the end result was that me and Adam had to buy you and Tony dinner.
Right.
But then Mr. Business over there had to go work.
Got called into work right, like, walking off of the 18th green. I got called into work. I was on call all day. And, of course, right at the end, I get called into work. So.
Which, I mean, honestly, if you had to get called in, it was better that it was right when we finished than if we were, like, at any point within the round. But it still was a bummer, because I totally forgot you were on call, because, I mean, it wasn't even a problem until the moment that we put our bags in the car.
Yeah, my biggest fear was like on the first tee I was going to get called on, but no, I got to play the whole round, which was nice. But we're going to have a rematch in October, or no, we're in November. October now.
So yeah, November. Do a little best out of three, I think, and then we'll make it. If somebody, like, let's say me and Adam win on the off chance that that happens.
Have a tiebreaker.
Then we'll do a tiebreaker somewhere, and then we'll have, like, a nice dinner, because that'll be fun. Yeah.
And shout out to my partner, Tony, because he hit some incredible shots.
He really did.
It shocked me.
It was at least a stroke. He got at least one point for you guys, which I think that made quite a difference. And then your putting got you those other two. It was... Yeah. It was nice. I mean, it was a fun game. We had a good time. I think Adam hadn't played at all, like, in 2 years, he said, right?
Yeah.
And Tony hadn't played that much either, but he had played, like, 4 or 5 times before that.
I know he played a round with me, and he played a round with you.
Right. Was that it? Just those two?
Before that. I think that was it, yeah.
Okay. That is a good... 2 rounds, though, from not playing does help a little bit, but... He hit some really good shots.
Yeah. I mean, both of those guys, I mean, they just pick up, they're naturally just athletic guys, and they know how to pick up a sport pretty easily. And if they put the time in, they could easily get really good.
They'd be really good. Yeah.
For not playing once every, 2-3 years, they are really good.
And they have a really good distance game the height
Tony
that they are.
Tony hits it a mile.
Yeah. They're just naturally athletic. So even though they're on the shorter side, their distance is great. You start seeing drop-offs when golfers start getting shorter, but they don't have any issues with that.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. Played at a beautiful course, and shout out to Wildwood Country Club. Very, very pretty course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hadn't played there in forever.
But yeah, so we had that last Sunday, and then yesterday we played. And, well, let's just put it this way. I did not win. Cam
did
got
not.
Me by 2 strokes, and I played not very good at all. It was off days for both of us. You shot 82 and I shot 84.
Yeah, it was one of those where you get there, and by the time you pay, that it's time to tee off. Like, none of us really had... You got to putt a little bit, but it wasn't like...
Yeah, and that didn't help at all.
yeah, it didn't. But, like, I didn't swing a single club till the first tee.
Right.
But I was just playing, I don't know, just more smart and simple, not trying to kill it, like, take a club up. But my driving was pretty good. I normally don't drive the ball like I did. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but I didn't. I think I had to take one drop, that all the balls I could find and play out of. My chipping and putting was very good, and that's where it was wrong for you,
man.
Because you were doing the things that my dad normally does.
Yeah, I mean, it was a complete 180 from last Sunday. I mean, I duffed so many chips. And my putts were, I mean, they were fine. They just were not going in. I didn't make a single birdie. Yeah, I didn't make a single birdie that
round. Yeah, me neither.
And I mean, usually we're both good for one or two.
Yeah, you usually can luck one in. Like, I mean, you usually can count for one. I just didn't double bogey anything. So I was 10 over, but it was just all bogeys. So it was not that great of a round on paper.
Yeah, I had 2 doubles in the front 9 that just really wrecked me.
And they were all from your chipping?
All from my chipping. And, it was bad. It was poor course management because, it happens to everybody. You hit a bad chip, and instead of gathering your thoughts and taking your time for the next one, you just walk up and do it again.
Yeah.
And so I duffed a chip, and I just... got frustrated, walked up, and then thinned it, just hit right in the center of the ball, and it, rolled 30 feet past the hole.
Which, that's usually what happens when you duff it. I mean, when you hit it right into the ground, you're automatically thinking, all right, I'm not going to do that again. And then you pull up on your body because you don't want to hit the ground, and you just hit it like with the bottom of the club right in the center of the ball, and just so much topspin. Like, it's, and that's a tough thing because it's, there's really not much you can do about fixing it, because once it happens, the entire day you're going to be worried about it. The only way to fix it is just hit the green so you don't have to chip. Because once you've done it once, it's in your head the whole time. Because, I mean, I think that was part of it for you, right? Because you kept, like, it was just a little bit in the back of your head that you were doing it.
Oh, yeah. I just had, after, like, the second duff chip, all my confidence was just gone the rest of the day. Like, I was just standing over the ball. I just did not feel confident at all. And I don't know what I was doing, really. I mean, the practice swings felt good. And as soon as I stepped up to the ball, just I would hit about 2 inches behind. And it was just, it was very frustrating. But, you know, that just means you gotta get on the practice green and chip a little bit and get that confidence back, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big thing. It's just taking time and working on it, honestly.
I hit a beautiful chip on the on 18.
You did. You really did. But, it was nice. Like, what a way to end it. Because it was – so this course, I don't know if they're getting ready for – like an amateur tournament or something, because a lot of the regular tees were pulled all the way back to the tips, to the professional tees. And so hole 18 was a par 5, and we had to play it from the tips. It was 550, almost 600 yards. And I hit a monster drive, and I hit a monster 3-wood, and still didn't even – I was close to the green, but I couldn't make it in 2. And it's like that I'm obviously not at that level to be doing that. And I think we should have gotten a couple strokes for having, because it was at least 8 tee boxes that were pulled all the way back. Yeah. And all the par 3s were pulled back.
Yeah, the par 3s didn't really bother me too much. But, man, those par 5s, super long. And, you know, we're used to playing, you know, maybe at most 480 mm-hmm. yard par fives. And I mean, every par five we played from was over 500,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Even like low 500s is okay. But when I hit a good long drive and a good long 3-wood, I should be over the green because it's just my skill level doesn't make me go that far back. Because I don't hit those very often, but I happened to, and I was still short of the green. And then I got scared of my chip. I pulled a Dylan and just duffed it right into the front of the green, and it's just one of those ways to finish. I still bogeyed it. It wasn't that bad, but it was just one of those days where, like, the score was okay, but I didn't feel like I was playing that great. I just felt like I was playing smarter than I had been, just kind of shooting for the center of the greens, not being super aggressive, and just trying to make good contact.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a good sign for both of us that even when we feel off, we're still shooting in the low 80s. You know, mm-hmm. it used to be when we were off, we were going to be in the 90s.
Right.
So we both definitely have improved big time in our game. And, you know, it's not going to be perfect every time. Golf is never going to be perfect every time.
No, but on off days, to still shoot, like, in the low 80s is not bad at all. And, I mean, we shoot lower at Charwood because Charwood's an easier course than Oak Hills.
And we play it a lot. And,
So we're pretty confident in where we can put it and all that kind of stuff. Like, I hadn't played that course in years, so mm-hmm. it was basically fresh. And we didn't warm up at all. So just to still be where we were, I was pretty proud of that. And then I have a tournament on Monday. So I was kind of viewing it as a warm-up for the Monday tournament.
Yeah.
And similar with Jim, too. I mean, he didn't play good. He's struggling. He lost... How much? Do you know exactly how much he lost?
Oh, how much weight?
Yeah.
I mean, probably... I would say probably 70, 40 or 50 60? Pounds.
Yeah, I thought he was almost in 60, but maybe he is. Maybe now he's at, like, 50 pounds. But he dropped so much weight in a year.
Yeah.
And he didn't have a very... He wasn't a long player before, but he really isn't now. He's lost a lot of swing speed. He lost what muscle he did have. He lost most of that, I'm sure.
Yeah, because he's not a gym. He's not a gym guy. He doesn't lift weights or anything like that, and his job isn't very physically demanding.
Yeah. So it's just not. He's a good golfer, but he gets in his head because he's just not a. He lost so much distance, and you know he's hitting his driver well, like 200 yards.
Yeah.
And that's center, like, he's not really hitting it further than that.
I feel like that can be fixed pretty easily, though. If he can just do some swing training, just some resistance training, I mean, because now his rotation can be fantastic because there's no weight in the way now. So if he can just get, you know, some more speed and just do a little bit of training, I think he'll be fine.
And that kind of brings us into some of our mailbag questions that we got this week, which was about shaft flex. And what's that for? And it made me think about Jim specifically because with all the weight loss and the swing speed lost, I'm sure he has stiff flex in all his clubs and his swing speed doesn't work for that. And the reason I say that, there's a lot of science in regards to the flex in certain shafts, but that's a way above me. But on a basic standpoint, the more flexible your shaft is, you know, when you swing down, that lag that's created is going to give you a lot more distance. But when you swing faster, it can become very uncontrollable if it's too flexible. The face will stay open, the club will be behind the ball, so you stiffen that shaft up so that you can swing normally and get control. But if you don't have very fast swing, you're not going to get any lag on that club, so it's not going to go very far. So I was thinking that if he switched to, like, just regular flex shaft, he'll probably increase, like, 30 yards on his drives.
Yeah, probably.
Because the slower when you're going back and you're coming down quick, that head's going to stay up top and cause that flex in it, and then it snaps through the ball. It's almost like when you throw, like when you watch a pitcher throw and it's all in his elbow and then it snaps forward and throws it. Imagine if you were trying to throw with a stiff arm. That's what it's like. When you don't get flex on that shaft, it's like throwing with a stiff arm. You're not going to go very far. So you want the correct flexion on your shaft for your swing speed. And because look at necessarily like Bryson talks about, he has that extra stiff, right? Because he swings so fast.
Mm-hmm.
He says he could go lower and get more yardage because it would flex more, but it would be not as controllable. So that's where you have to find your balance, right? I mean, I know we both play stiff shafts because we have faster swing speeds, but if we dropped it down, when we did hit it nice, it would go probably further, but we'd have a lot more control issues.
And, you know, besides your swing speed, it also, what's really important about it is the load that you're putting on the shaft. So if you look at, I don't know if you guys out there was a golfer named Nick Price, and there's a golfer named Fred Couples. Now, Fred Couples has just the buttery, smoothest swing you will ever see in golf. It just looks just effortless.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And then you have a golfer named Nick Price who he played around the same time as Fred Couples, and I think they're both on the Champions Tour now. And his swing is just kind of like Bryson's, just very fast. Like he's done swinging before you even realize it. Just very quick tempo. But both of their swing speeds are about the same. But because Nick Price is putting such a enormous amount of force in his swing because of the tempo, he required a much more stiff shaft than Fred Couples. Because Fred Couples was so much more just his, it was a very slow take back, and then just he accelerated very smoothly into his swing. So it's a lot about your tempo as well with your swing. And it's hard to really, as a you know, an amateur golfer, it's hard to figure that out. So the best way to do it is just to go to your local golf shop or your local club fitter. And, I mean, you don't have to buy anything. You can just say, hey, I want to get fitted for a shaft and see what shaft I should be hitting. And, you know, you could be hitting anywhere from a 90-mile-an-hour swing speed to 120-mile-an-hour swing speed. And some people with a 90-mile-an-hour swing speed will be using the same shaft as the person with 110-mile-an-hour swing speed. It just depends on your tempo and just, you know, the weight you're putting on your shaft and your swing.
Yeah.
Definitely go get fitted and figure out exactly what type of shaft. Because also brands with shafts are so crazy. Like one brand's regular stiff will be the next brand's regular shaft.
Right.
So there's so many different brands and models of shafts. It can be a little overwhelming. So if you can get a professional fitter to tell you exactly what kind of shaft you need, then you can go on eBay, Golf Avenue, whatever it is, and specifically look at a club with the shaft that you've been fitted for.
That's important too. You know, for beginners, it's not going to really matter, but for people that have had, that have played golf and had clubs that worked well for them and then had some form of life change, you know, like, you know, Jim lost all that weight and he doesn't swing the same, or, you know, something happened where you don't swing the same way you did, well, then you're just not going to get the same output from your clubs that you were before because they were set up for how you used to swing. So just go to somebody professional and let them look at you, look at the, you know, because they'll use launch monitors, they'll use technology to see, you know, what not only swing speed, but like you said, that load point or that kick point on drivers. And similar with your woods. I mean, with irons, it's not, there is a difference in shafts, but they don't vary too much. A lot of the times, as you see, there's all these companies that make driver shafts, like, that are even off brands.
With irons, it's not really about the flex. You pretty much have, you know, senior, regular, stiff, mm-hmm. extra stiff. It's about the weight of the, if you're using steel shaft. Now, I've seen people use graphite shafts and irons, mm-hmm. and that's getting more and more popular now. It's just very a lot more expensive to get graphite shafts with iron.
Yeah, they're lighter, so usually they're used in more like beginner clubs, but they're coming back for professionals who are mm-hmm. starting to use more graphite. I think they get a lot more spin and compression on the ball than you would with steel shafts.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a cool question. Another one was, what shoes are best for my game? And I thought that was really interesting because I always thought like you just need golf shoes for golf. But I was like, well, why? And obviously you've got the traction on the bottom. That was, you know, you've got spikes. It keeps you from spinning out of your shoes, right? But I actually did some research mm-hmm. on what makes golf shoes better than, because there's companies out there that lets you put spikes on regular shoes. So you can wear, like, you know, mm-hmm. your Air Jordans or your basketball shoes and spike them, which still work. But why do golf shoes, like, what do they do specifically? So I found this interesting. First off, it was balance. It says, unlike athletic shoes, golf shoes have a larger sole and broader base because the swing is performed standing still. So if you think about, like, cleats in other sports, they're very tight. And they don't have a wide base because they need your foot to mm-hmm. stay pretty in the exact same spot, right? When you plant or move, it mm-hmm. needs to always be in the same spot. With golf, you're already planted. But when you rotate, you need the ability to move your feet. So that was a really interesting one. The other one was stability. It said if you swing a club in your bare feet, you'll notice that there is way more foot action than you thought. That's why you need stability that a golf shoe provides. It has these built-in stabilizers on the sides of your arches that keep it shifting from right to left. Things that also wouldn't be in athletic shoes because you need to be able to shift your feet that way when you're doing any other sport other than golf. The other one was flexibility, and I thought that was interesting because, too, you think you're not always playing on a driving range flat. You know, there's times where it's an uphill lie and you have to be able to lean a lot forward, or it's a downward lie where like you're sideways almost and your one foot's above your other. And most shoes have a ankle support in them where it keeps your ankles from being able to flex like that, because it would be unsafe for sports like basketball, football, baseball. You know, they basically keep it all nice and tight so that nothing happens. But at golf, you need that flexibility in the shoe to go up, down, and to the sides. And so those shoes allow you to do that, any golf shoes. Now, another one was comfort, and that's going to be based on you, whatever you like. I know FootJoy is probably one of the best shoes in golf. They only make golf shoes, at least that I've seen. I mean, they make, like, other golf products, but shoe-wise, I've only seen them make golf shoes.
Yeah. I have FootJoys. I have Spikeless FootJoys, and they are the most comfortable golf shoe I have ever had. And, you know, I like Spikeless ones, so, you know, you have spike golf shoes, which are the actual little circular spikes that are driven into the shoe, into the sole. You know, cleats, basically. And then you have Spikeless, which are, if you look over, it literally just has spike shoes. You can replace them with Spikeless. They're just in the shoe. You can't replace them. They're just part of the shoe. And it covers the entire foot of the shoe. And people say you get less grip with Spikeless, which might be true. You probably do get more grip with traditionally spiked golf shoes, because you can then, you know, if they ever go dull, you can replace them. But I actually feel a little uncomfortable with spikes. I feel like they're a little too grippy for me. I like to have just a little bit of free motion in there with my feet. But, you know, again, that's just me. So I would, you know, it's really up to the player. Just like I said in a previous podcast, don't feel like you have to do something one way, you know, just kind of test them out, figure out what feels comfortable for you and your golf swing.
Yeah, Spikeless are more designed for walkers. That's what they're. So you see a lot of Spikeless shoes on the tour. Gotcha. Because they're made for nice. They're the most comfortable shoes you can find, and they're made to be walked in. So, but you can wear them regardless. But that's what, because they're relatively newer on the golf scene, because of the ability to walk 6 to 10 miles of a golf course. Mm-hmm. and do so comfortably. I wear spiked golf shoes, and I always have, and I like the ability of changing them in and out, because my golf shoe, I'll wear them for years. Now that I'm playing more than I ever have, they probably won't last me as long, but I like the ability of changing them in and out, and each time you do, they feel like really new grippy shoes. But they do grip a lot, so it is something that you have to get used to. And they kind of jet out at certain points of the shoe. So in the beginning, it can almost be a little uncomfortable, because it's like got weird pressure points, which I think is where the comfort comes from using the Spikeless. Mm-hmm. And when you see Spikeless, that doesn't mean they're flat. It's kind of a misconception. It just means that they don't have removable spikes in them. They have basically little rectangles throughout the whole sole that grip into the ground. So it's not that they don't have the traction, it's just the specific sole is different. But it's just up to your preference. But I've seen those companies that make where you can turn your shoe into golf shoes, and that is cool. Mm-hmm. And fine. But there's a reason that there is a market for golf shoes, and we kind of went over that. You'll feel a little restricted using like high top basketball shoes, your older shoes, because they're not going to have the built-in technology that you need for the golf course. So for amateurs, it may not matter, but if you want to do everything you can to help improve, I would say just get golf shoes. And there's so many years of new styles and all this stuff, so you can get like two-year-old new, they're still new, but they're two-year-old styles for cheap. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, they really aren't that expensive. If you go to, like, your discount stores, too, I mean, you can find them anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can go on Amazon even and find really good deals.
Yeah. Yeah, I got my wife's spikeless for like $35, and they're Adidas. They're brand new. They just, you know, I guess they're last year's design, but I mean, they're going to be great for her for years because, I mean, she didn't wear them that much.
You can go to Ross or TJ Maxx and sometimes find them golf shoes in there.
Yeah, that's what we wanted to announce too. We have we're going to be giving away a size 10 Jordan Spieth's brand new spiked. They are spiked. They're not spikeless. Black golf shoes. They're really nice.
Under Armour.
They look really good. So we'll post it on our Instagram too, and get all the details on how you can enter to win those golf shoes. So look forward to that. Any more to add to that question, Dylan?
No, I think, you know, just get what's comfortable for you.
Yeah, I thought we covered that really well. We have a question from our man Harrison Holt, the winner of the Wilson Clubs. He says that he loves them too. I talked to him a little bit.
Nice.
And whenever he gets out to get in nice weather, I know it's been rainy up in Tennessee, but whenever he gets some nice weather, he said he'd post them, but he'd taken them out a couple times. So his question was, how should I approach my time at the range to make actual gains in my golf?
Just don't.
Don't listen to Dylan. Range, that's a really good question. Dylan doesn't go to the range before his round, but he will still go to the range. Yeah. And I think...
Yeah, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
What you're saying, like, don't expect to go to the range like right before your round and make any changes. That's not what it's for.
Yeah.
That's just for warming up and kind of seeing what shot you're going to be playing that day. That's not for improving. So just take that out. Like, you need to go, first and foremost, go to the range and only go to the range if you want to do any golf improvement. And for me personally, if I notice that there's, like, whether it be my short game or my 150 yards and in or my woods or my driver, like, if there's a part of my game that I notice is, like, it's really weak, then I will go to the range and only work on that.
Mm-hmm.
Only do that. Too many times you see people go, I just want to go hit my clubs, and then they hit, you know, from whatever, 58 degree all the way up to their driver, and then they got half a bucket left, and they start just hammering drives. And they basically lost all that they were working on their short irons because they're hitting 50 drives as far as they can because they feel like they've warmed up. So even just leaving your clubs in the car and taking the ones that you want to work on, I've done that before, and not get sidetracked with the halo look of your driver and being like, oh, I just want to hit it, because you have that freedom to hit it. Like, I would say the last thing you really want to work on is your driver, because that's going to take time. But if you can be on it from 150 yards in, that's going to help your golf game a lot. So your 8-iron to whatever your, you know, sand wedge or like that, get really good with those and just hit those. That's something that I do. How about you, Dylan?
Yeah, when I do go to the range, I kind of pretend that I'm playing at the course. So I will start with hitting, basically I'll just repeat itself. So I'll hit a driver, and then I'll hit a 6-iron, and then I'll hit a wedge, and then maybe I'll take a couple of chip shots. And then I'll start over. I'll hit a 3-wood, and then I'll hit like a 4-iron, and, you know, kind of just mix it up a little bit, just kind of get myself in the rhythm of actually playing a hole. If I'm practicing my driver, I give myself about a 50-yard lane, so I'll take one point at the end of the range and another point and try to only hit my driver in that area and just kind of, you know, mimic a fairway. And then... let me tell you, range finders help so much with driving range. If you can get your hands on a range finder, they have some on Amazon for under $100. But I am definitely very biased at Blue Tees. They have a range finder for about $125, and then there's a range finder for $200. And they're both very good. So get yourself a range finder. That way you can pick spots in the range that you have a very accurate distance. And that way, you can get to know all your clubs, what the distances are. I've seen players, professional players, who actually have written with Sharpie on their irons the exact length of each club. They're like, yeah, this is my 137-yard club. This is my 168.
That's hilarious.
You know, so, you know, I think knowing exactly the yardages that you're hitting helps so much.
Mm-hmm.
I think aiming as well. I think aiming is a very important part of, especially beginner golfers, just figuring out how to aim. So there's so many different drills you can do on the range with figuring out what the best way to aim for you is, whether it's a stick or you can use a club to help, you know, line your feet up correctly. I know, Cam, you do that on the range with the lining stick. There's a lot of ways that you can figure out how to aim. So I mean, just, you know, play around, just figure out how you want to aim, how you want to, what clubs are each distance, you know, just figure out your game. That's a good place to learn, because you're not going to do that on the course. You don't want to figure out your game when you're already on the course. So
no.
Yeah. 2 days beforehand, if you know you're going to golf on Saturday, maybe Thursday evening, go to the range and hit some balls. And that way you'll have it in your mind, but at least when you get to the course, your body will be fresh.
Yeah. And if you go on any golf blog, forum, anything, you'll find just loads of on-the-range tips and things to do. So, and it's some, a lot of times it's not even using a club, it's using the range basket, like, in your hands, and get a proper rotation. It's using, setting your club, your bag, like, in a certain spot, so when you swing, it forces you to go under the plane and force, like, a draw. Things like that, where once you've figured out your clubs, you know your distance, and you're comfortable relatively with that, then you can start working on, like, all right, how do I shallow this club so I can really get more distance and do things like that. But don't start getting crazy on the range until, like, you can pick up your 8-iron and be like, I can hit this 150, 160 yards or 140 yards. Whatever that is for you, you want to be able to do that. If you have to pick it up and it's like, you could just chunk it and then you could thin it and then hook it. Like, if it's not consistent at all, you need to just work on making contact with the ball. Just take a club, make good contact with that. Then take another one. Keep doing it. Because these clubs are getting longer and longer. So even with irons. So it's going to feel a little different each time. Especially if you were to go from like a wedge to a 5-iron. It's going to feel like a completely different club. So first, get comfortable with your clubs. And however that is, however long that takes, it's going to take different times for everyone. And then once you finally get there where you can be confident within reason that you could pick up a club and hit it a certain distance, then you can start working on, you know, impact spots, swing planes, you want to have your pre-shot routine already, but work on that a little bit. Face control. There's just so many different small things in golf that, I mean, me and you work on all the time, like no matter how long we play. And a lot of times I go to the range and specifically just work on swing plane. Like, I don't care about the distance because I know my distances, but I'm working on getting the certain feel right where I'm getting under the ball, getting under that swing plane, and it's coming through. So it just depends on how far along you are in your golf journey. So it's going to be different for everybody. Dylan, I got a good question from Pitch the Pig that I actually never thought about, was favorite pro female golfers. And I mean, I thought that was such a unique question, because first off, lady golfers have the best swing I've ever seen in my life. Lady golfers' swings are so fluid, and if you want to see what a golf swing should look like, don't be looking at Dustin Johnson. Because go watch some of these lady golfers, and it is the lag that they put on a club, by they're just more flexible than we are. They're able to turn and rotate, and it is some beautiful golf to watch. And honestly, if you watch Golf Channel like in the morning before like a major round, usually the LPGA is playing, and I'll watch that a little bit, and watching them play is so cool. because it's just it is a little different than the way that the guys play. I mean, who and a lot of lady golfers don't transcend the sport, but who is the lady golfer that transcended that sport? Who would you say? I would say it's Michelle Wee, right?
Yeah, I was thinking Michelle Wee.
Cause like, not even like WNBA, like Lisa Leslie, like a lot of people know that name because of how transcendent she was for the WNBA. I feel like Michelle Wee was that for the LPGA. She kind of transcended that sport almost. Like she was more famous than just as a golfer. She just, I don't know why,
for sure.
But I mean, she was great. And she kind of brought power to that sport. Similar to like the changes that Bryson is doing and making golf popular now. Cause, and I've looked at the top driving distance of the year so far for the LPGA, and they're around 280 yards. Like, they're smashing it. You know, I mean, average on for men's is only like 320 on average. You know, maybe less than that. I love watching it. So I would say like Michelle Wee, obviously, but she's not playing anymore. The other one would be Lexi Thompson. I don't know why. I just know that name. I don't know if it's because she's been on commercials or... But when I asked that, when I read that question, that was the first name I thought of, was Lexi Thompson.
Yeah, I have two. I have Paige Spiranek. She's very good. And she is doing a lot of interesting things for the game as well when it comes to women in general. I mean, she's doing a lot of good things. And also, Lucy Robson is very good as well. I listen to both of their podcasts, and they have YouTube channels that I look at as well. I don't think they're tour players, but they are PGA professional.
The other one I thought of was Sa-young Kim. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong, but she's a South Korean player, and she's one that I see a lot.
Yep.
She's number 10 on the tour and number 5 on the Korean tour. And she's placed pretty highly on their championships. She's another one that is really good. But they all, I would say, go watch the LPGA. It is a really unique game because they play at unique courses, I think. Like, we just don't see it very often on the PGA. And their swings are so beautiful and repeatable. If I could swing as smooth as them, my whole life would change.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just not as popular. I mean, golf is just now, I feel like, getting more and more popular. But the ladies' golf
I feel like with women's sports, LPGA is pretty up there, though, when it comes to amount of viewership. Like, compared to, like, WNBA or,
women's soccer.
Anything like that, I think it's definitely up there.
I think the only thing that women's sport, like women's World Cup, I think because the United States of women's soccer is the best in the world.
Yeah.
So I think they are them specifically maybe would transcend that, but I think women's soccer by itself, regular league soccer, I still think your LPGA is ahead of that, and I'm assuming it is too for the WNBA. But the WNBA has been getting more viewership lately. It just doesn't compete with men's sports.
Yeah.
But they, they play a different game too. You watch WNBA game, it looks so much more fundamental. It almost looks like old school basketball. Not a lot of like 3-point shooting, a lot of like pick and rolls and a lot of going towards the basket like how it used to be.
Yeah.
But I thought those were some really good questions.
Yeah, keep them coming, guys. We love the questions.
Yeah, we have, if you want to submit a question or something for us to watch or anything you want to get featured on the podcast, anything like that, it's bogeyorbetterpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to reach out. And we get a lot of good questions. We just, there's only so much time for all these questions. But keep them coming, and we'll definitely do our best to answer them. But, Dylan, I think that's a wrap for today.
That is a wrap. Thank you guys for all your questions, for listening, and we will see y'all next week.
Have a good one, guys. Bye.